The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch.
Here we are. It's National Veterans Day, Meredith.
I know. I put a good post up to honor our veterans and our heroes, and that includes our mules.
Of course.
Horses like Reckless.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who have given us all their best. I think it's really important to honor them, and I'm glad that we have a holiday like this to do so.
Yes, this is a good day to recognize our veterans, and that includes the mules and the horses that served out on the battlefield. We're going to talk about turning fear into curiosity. Am I right?
Yeah, that's really important to do. And it has a lot to do with the way things are going right now. Now, I know right now I would like to congratulate all those Americans that elected our new President Trump. And I know that he's going to bring a lot to the table. He's a hero himself.
Yes.
And I know there are a lot of people who would disagree with me, but apparently there's a lot more that agree with me. I might say at this point, there's lots of people that think shortcuts work and they can get by with shortcuts and they can think they're a majority in their own head. But, you know, the people that they didn't see were just being quiet. Now, I've learned a lot of things from my grandmother. This kind of illustrates the day. We've had to take a lot in this country and practically taken it to the ground by not really raising our voices and saying anything about the way our country was disintegrating up to this point. And so we were just nice people. And as my grandmother said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And that's what her generation grew up with.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't surprise me that a lot of people weren't talking when the Democrats were in charge of things and things started going south.
Right.
Rest assured, we are going to be in much better shape as we were when he was in the presidency before. I also know that people who think lying is okay, that was another dispute I had with my grandmother, is whether or not lying was an okay thing or not. And we had the discussion where she said that if you're going to hurt somebody's feelings, maybe it's okay to tell a white lie. But I don't think that hearing those things when I was young really aided me all that well, because she used to take me to church too, and I learned how it's supposed to go by listening to all of the scripture about Jesus and the way that he approached things and the way that he thought about things. So now it doesn't surprise me that people are becoming renewed through Jesus, and why you hear now the only way to salvation is through Jesus and his teaching. And it's not unlike what we need to do and the approaches that we really need to do with our mules. Mules are, well, they will humble you.
Oh, yeah.
And that's their duty, you know? And I didn't know that. So, first of all, you know, my grandmother was telling me all this stuff. And, of course, I argued with her. And I already know. She'd tell me something nice. Oh, I already know that. Thinking that all of this information was already in my head. I didn't need to pay attention to what other people were saying and everything, because I was born smart. I had all this stuff in my head, and all I had to do was remember it. I didn't have to go to school to learn it, is what I thought. And in these arguments that I had with her, I always told her, I says, well, you know, I see people doing things a lot differently than you're telling me to do. And they're doing fine, and things are working for them. And she told me, she says, well, you'll find out. And so what I did was I went ahead and went after my horses. I didn't have mules at that time. And my Aunt Ruth would take me riding along the Mississippi River up Minnesota, and I learned all about these big animals. And at first, I was kind of afraid of them. There was a lot of fear there, but then she let me ride in front with her to start out from. And after a while, I gained some confidence that I could ride my own horse along the trail. And so she would start letting me do that when I was about 6 years old. I was riding with her with about 4 years old. And so I've been riding these animals and everything and gone through a little bit of fear and everything, but it was okay because my aunt was there with me. My grandmother didn't like to ride all that much, but she was full of good advice. You better be careful. You better ride with boots. Don't ride in your tennis shoes, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
My grandmother was very, very strict, you know. She was all about doing the right thing. And it was kind of funny because much later in life, I became interested in training horses. And I had an Arabian mare that used to, you know, she was a great riding horse after she bucked me off. The first time when I first got on, I couldn't ride her without getting bucked off. And I thought that maybe it would be a good idea to just check out what other trainers are doing and take their advice and everything. And so I schooled with a lot of different kinds of trainers before I ever got to dressage. And then most of them were Western trainers. And they said, oh, yeah, you've got to sack them out to desensitize them. And you just throw a bunch of stimulus at them, and eventually they'll just decide they don't want to move. So I thought that was okay. And so I would rate that as a good response, you know, I usually got from doing these things. But that Arabian mare was so darn smart. I heard all about tying a tire to the saddle horn and just letting her drag it around the arena. I learned all about hobbles. I learned all about tarps. And every time I did anything like that, she just exploded.
Sure.
It worked with other horses, but not with her.
Right.
I do have this vision in my head of standing in the middle of the arena with this horse, who is hobbled in the front, a Scotch hobble in the back, a tarp over her back, tied to a tire, a big tractor tire, with a rope around the saddle horn, and the horse was still running around the arena.
Uh-oh.
And I'm just standing there looking at her going, well, none of this stuff is working very well. On the other horses, it was what I would call a good way to train. But I thought there might be a better way to do these things. So I backed off, and instead of tying them in a corner and flopping that tarp bottom until they stopped moving, I decided maybe a better way to do would be to go ahead and tie them up. I knew they had to be tied up. And then instead of using a crackly, noisy tarp, I thought, why not just use an oversized saddle blanket? You know, not a pad, just a blanket. And start at the head and ease it over their face, and kind of get them used to, you know, being touched with the blanket. Now it's not my hands, now it's a blanket. And I found that turned out to be a better approach to calm them and keep them from exploding. And that Arabian, she liked that. She said, well, that's okay. But she said, but you've already put me through all this horrible stuff and I don't trust you.
You know? Right.
So she would stay calm. She was very much like a mule. This is what introduced me to the temperament and the mentality of Arabians and thoroughbreds, because they're very close to being like mules because they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to figure that out. so I went with the better way, you know, and really didn't learn the best way to train until I got with mules and actually started doing that. And I started making a lot less mistakes as I learned the best ways from going to clinics, reading books, and trying to educate myself. Now, in the beginning, I thought, like I said, that I was born knowing everything. It was just a matter of digging in my head. But I soon found out as I got older that, no, there's a lot in the world, and it looks like people are doing things different ways, but the results are not the same. And there is such a thing as good, better, and the best way to do things. And you start with, like my grandmother said, you're going to be a sorry old woman if you don't learn to walk in good posture and use good manners. And initially that means be nice. Then it means educate yourself. And then what you learn, practice it habitually. And when I started trying to do that, I found that the results I was getting from my animals were a lot better. And today they are just amazing. Now, I have a little story to tell. I also used to think that, okay, these older trainers like Sally Swift really couldn't tell me anything because she's too old now. She wrote a couple of books on centered riding, and I even took a clinic from Sally Swift when she was, I think, about 83, or at least in her late 70s.
Yeah.
And this was during the time when I thought I couldn't learn anything from an older person, because they're not riding anymore all the time, so how could they be, you know, any good to me at all? But I read her books, and then I started trying to be aware of the things that she talked about. Like when you're riding in the saddle, don't push down too hard in the stirrups. Think of it as your feet riding on little bubbles, and you don't want to break them. You can lower your heels best by lifting your toes and not pushing down in your stirrups. Because when you push down in your stirrups, you actually push yourself out of that balanced posture. But these were things that I learned from her. And, of course, after having the clinic, then I had to buy her two books that she had done by that time. And I realized the value of having that elderly advice. And that got me to thinking about the advice that you get from grandparents and the value of having a whole family with roles in that whole family to learn from. And so there are things that are really important that dad can teach you. He typically, in those days, he was the provider. And so he wasn't there a lot, and a lot of kids grew up resenting that their father had a job and had to work and had to be gone. There were even some wives and mothers that felt that way. And so as we got into society and started kind of thinking of new things and got a little bit spoiled about not having to do as much, start resenting that they weren't there all the time, that they weren't on our time or our will, on our beck and call. But you read about kids that are growing up, they're falling in love, and they want to get married, and they get married, and then they have kids. And then one of the things you learn that I learned then was it's not so easy getting a babysitter when you've been tied to this child that has worn you out, that keeps demanding your attention 24/7. You need a break and you want to go out with your husband and do something, but you can't find a babysitter. And if you can, you're not sure if you can trust them. So that is also a value of keeping a family together, because with your parents getting to be grandparents, they have generally in a family situation an interest and an investment in their grandchildren. And they don't mind looking after them while you go out. And they don't mind telling you the stories or telling the stories to them about what they learned when they were being raised. And these stories are really good to listen to. And that's where you can learn a whole lot. That's where I learned when my mother gave me a camera that it was a really good idea to take pictures. I already liked writing stories, and so I just started writing diaries all the time about the things I was doing and then taking pictures of them. And my mother, you know, she was kind of, well, skeptical about my pictures. She said, how you can tell what's in these pictures because they're all fuzzy. And I just turned around to her and I said, but I remember when I took that picture, so I know what's in it. She says, well, you can't really share that with others, can you? So you're going to have to get better at that. But that taught me to be open to learning. And it's funny how all these things can kind of lower your resistance to learning and cause you to look at them in a different way. And when you're talking about training your horse or your mule or pony or donkey, you do learn to look at things a little differently. You can sit there, and I have spent hours and hours in the beginning trying to encourage a stubborn animal to move forward or to do this or do that. And what I discovered was that the only thing that happened in those situations when I had a bad attitude was that the animal only got more resistant, and there was a lot more anxiety that was going on between both of us. And then when they would get resistant and use a very dangerous tactic like kicking or biting, that instilled more fear. And then the light went on, and I went, wow, when you're training with fear, you're not going to get the result that you want.
Right.
It's better to see what the animal is giving you and be grateful for it, for that response, and not drill them on things until you get what you would consider the right response, because now you're mad anyway, and they know it. And so the response you get is going to be fake news. You know,
right.
Oh, I'm going to do this for you today for this moment, but you just wait till tomorrow and we'll see if I still feel the same way. You know, you can't really rely on it that way. That's what I've learned anyway. So I learned that if you break things down into very, very small steps. When you're training an equine at any age, going slowly and being clear and consistent in your approach is a more rewarding and a much safer way to train for both you and your equine. See, because you're actually giving them time to assess what it is you're trying to tell them. And if you take the time to approach things slowly, it gives you the time to assess their body language and their reactions so that you know whether or not what you're trying to teach them is being successful. And I found that it's a fact that animals, like children, learn best when you're patient with them. When you take things slowly, explain clearly, and break lessons down into small, doable steps. And that's why it's so important to teach children in school the very, very basics in the beginning about mathematics, about writing and ABCs, and learning first to familiarize yourself with letters, which is going to be the basis for the words that they learn to spell later. You don't teach the alphabet and then pile words right on top of it, because what you're doing is you're just building a pile of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of kids that will fail in school because they can't keep up.
Right.
And we all learn differently. We all react to things differently because we have different feelings that we have from our life's experience. And the animals are the same way. Now, there's a lot of people that ask me, you know, oh, I got a problem with this animal, and I just bought him, and he's X years old, and the people treated him this way before, and I stop them before I end up in a 50-minute phone call listening to what they got to tell me about the animal.
Right.
I tell them, it doesn't matter what happened to him before. None of the ways that he interacted with anybody before you matters. The only thing that matters is the relationship between you and him. And it may take a long time to develop a relationship because of his negative experience. But eventually, when the way you treat him becomes habitually nice and fair and respectful and kind, and you take things in small steps that he can understand, and that you don't drill on things, and you give him a day in between to rest and think about what went on between the two of you the day before and not push it, that he will proceed more calmly with each new day as his feeling toward you gets more affectionate and he bonds with you. A lot of people think of being affectionate is the same as bonding, but it really isn't. They can like you and they can be affectionate towards you, and that's a part of bonding. But when you really bond, that's when trust comes in. They begin to trust that you are always going to behave this way, that you are always going to approach things from a positive standpoint, and you aren't going to get mad about it if things don't work out quite the way that you wanted them to work out. You're not even going to waste time thinking about how you wanted it to work out. You're going to spend time thinking about how grateful you are for the way that it worked out at the moment. And when you close your training sessions that way, you can always close on a good note. I made the mistake of thinking that I had to attain a certain goal before I could stop the lessons. If he didn't take a step sideways and I wanted to do a side pass, then I would just figure out a way to make him side pass. And I was really ignoring the fact that it might be painful for him to make that move, because athletes always do exercises before they start playing games.
Sure.
Seriously, games, you know? And that's so they don't hurt themselves. But coming to that kind of knowledge, it took a long time before I realized that was even going on. And so I kind of revised my program and started getting a little smarter about how I did it. And so you do, obstacles seem, they seem like they're simple enough, like a bridge, for instance. And so, but you get out there and you go, oh, there's this big flat surface, it should be easy to just walk over it, right? Wrong. Who knows what that animal is thinking in their head? And even if they went over it the day before, that means, that doesn't mean it's going to be the same experience the next day.
Right.
Something has changed. And then they suck you into thinking, oh, well, what changed? What have I got going on here today that wasn't here yesterday? Well, you can spend the rest of your life trying to figure out what's going on in their head.
Right.
They're very patient. They'll wait. Wait. You know? So you just got to figure that what's really going on when they're backing off like that. It's just they're taking their time thinking about this situation and trying to assess whether they really want to do it or not. And so that is a perfect time to say, oh, well, at least you're not running away and you're not running backwards and running past me and everything. You're standing still. So this might be a good time to quit the lesson. So we'll do that and we'll revisit this tomorrow. Because it's really not a competition or a race to get to the goal that you have set for yourself. It's just time together. It's just time that you spend together getting to know each other. And when they can do these kinds of things and stop you in your tracks, what they're actually doing is they're giving you time to think. They're just letting you have time to think about the long-term goals, to start planning ahead and break this entire experience that isn't working so well into smaller steps in your mind and decide. They're giving you time to think about a different approach, but they're also making it clear that now is not the time. So this is a good time to end the lesson and come back with further assessments about how you're going to approach this the next time. Now, if your equine balks at any obstacles, all you got to do is slow down, go back, reapproach the obstacle. I mean, you can keep going if you want to. Then, if necessary, use persuasion and a pull and release action on your lead rope. And if they take a step forward, even the smallest attempt at compliance is important to encourage your equine to try harder. And that's acceptable. Going slowly is a great and humane way to train any animal at any stage of life or skill level. By going slowly and being clear and consistent and rewarding even the smallest success, you'll build your equine's confidence, you'll gain his trust in you, you'll set him up for success in all future tasks, because he knows that if he's not sure about something, that you're not going to get all unglued. There's nothing worse than when the mama gets mad and starts fighting with you.
Yeah.
And these animals, they feel the same way as we do. And maybe they are trying as hard as they can. Oftentimes when I was growing up, I was very precocious. And I thought about other ways to do things other than what my parents were telling me to do, or my grandmother or my aunt, you know. And so I was kind of a badass, if you will.
You rebel.
I know, right? Yeah, so I gave them all kinds of trouble, and I didn't see it their way until I got much, much older. And I usually, well, most of the stuff that I learned after I started training equines. And my Arab mare was just amazing teaching me things, but even she wasn't as slow and patient as the mules were. And I often got into altercations with them and everything. And I often would do stupid things, like I would think, oh, well, I'm just going to do some obstacles and I've only got about 45 minutes before I got to go to this appointment or that appointment or go grocery shopping or whatever. So I thought, well, if I've got this 45 minutes, I'll just go out and do some obstacles. Wrong. It seems like when you put a time limit on these guys, they feel compelled to take more of your time and make you slow down.
There you go.
By taking way more time than you planned on. And then sometimes it doesn't work at all and you have to quit before you've done anything positive. So I developed this way of kind of reminding myself on what to think when I'm running into problems so that I don't get mad. Got a kind of a short fused temper. I used to. Not so much anymore, but I used to. And leading training on the obstacle course is your equine's initial exposure to real fear. And how you handle your equine's fear will determine how he will handle all stressful situations in the future. That's why it's so important not to get into a battle with him, not to create any kind of anxiety at all. And you really have to be willing to slow down a lot so that you can have success and so you can gauge what is success. Maybe you don't get that side pass that day, but maybe you will get moving a foot over to the side without the rest of the body. Learn to appreciate it. Let him have time to look at the obstacles that you put in front of him, no matter what they are. Don't just decide to go for a walk, and then he's barely leading training, and then you put an obstacle in front of him that you want him to look at or whatever, and he's going, what the heck do you want to look at a pile of railroad ties for? They look really spooky, and not only that, they're all stacked up and they smell bad. You know? Or you're going over a bridge. I'm not so sure that bridge isn't going to cave in with my weight, you know. These are all things that I didn't think about in the beginning, but I'm sure that my mules and donkeys did, because they just weren't going anywhere. So I determined that maybe just, here I am using the Oats reward, and I thought, well, here's something I can remember very easily, is Oats, O-A-T-S. And that gives me my instructions on how to approach any given situation. First, we have the letter O. It's just like teaching kids in school. Put the letters together before you get the words. O means observe. That means we just sit there and look at the obstacle. We don't do anything else. We look at it. I give them a reward for looking at it. And then we go in. That's the end of the lesson. Then A is the next letter. That's your approach. Now, you were telling us your story about the SUV and introducing your animal to an SUV.
Well, I had a mule that was terrified of ATVs. So I placed an ATV in the round pen with him. And I had the engine off, and I placed the Oats right there next to the ATV. And, of course, I was next to the ATV for reassurance. And then once we got through that, then the next day I would turn on the ATV, let it idle, and then have him come back to feed his Oats. And then eventually I would move on with the ATV slowly, and he would follow me around so that he could get the Oats. So it just took a few days.
Did he touch his nose to that ATV?
Eventually, yes, he did. That was the very, yeah, once he was eating the Oats, and then he would kind of, he'd really look at that and study that ATV. So it was a good positive thing.
Mm-hmm. And when he got rid of any anxiety, what did he do? Did he just kind of sigh and let out all that anxiety?
Yes, absolutely. That's what he did.
So what we have spelled here is observe, approach, touch, and sigh. And what does that spell?
Oh, this is good.
Yeah, so it's an easy thing to remember, and it also teaches you to pay attention to his responses while you're doing the training. See, when it's just like I was talking about earlier, by taking these things and breaking them down into much smaller steps and giving him time to figure out what you want and you time to figure out what makes him react better, then you've got a much deeper level of the that's building in your relationship. by paying attention to each other.
Sure.
And so this is what builds true bonding. You can get them to do things, but and they can go, oh, gee, you were so nice during all this, and kind of cuddle you and everything. But that's not true bonding. True bonding really helps, really gets developed when you take these things in their respective steps so that he and you can learn the smaller lessons that go along with these things. For instance, when you're observing, instead of fleeing the moment he sees anything fearful, what you're doing, your equine will first learn to stop and observe the obstacle and show curiosity instead of fear, because he knows that you're not going to force the situation.
Right.
And that's how you start changing that attitude from him, from fear to curiosity. And what happens with you is that you can maintain your own sense of calmness because you're not anticipating him bolting and running. So that's a way to get you both calm and ready to approach the obstacle. When you give yourself time to do that, then you have lots of things to reward. Because if he's calm, he may take a step forward. And if he's hesitant, just reach in your fanny pack and offer a reward for a step or two in the direction of the obstacle. Do not let him have the reward until he is offered some kind of compliance. And that means you've got to look very hard to identify that compliance.
Sure.
And when he does take one step forward, be happy with that.
Right.
Give him his oats. He doesn't need to negotiate the entire obstacle for a reward in the beginning. He doesn't need to take multiple steps. He needs to learn that he wants to be led, that he wants to go with you. And then in step three, when he touches an obstacle that he's fearful of, do exactly what you did with that ATV. Put the oats right next to it, because you know he likes the oats. And, you know, you just put the crimped oats on the ground or on the obstacle to encourage him to negotiate the obstacle and praise him lavishly and reward generously when he does. And what you're doing is you're bolstering his confidence that he can trust you. Not to go, surprise, we're going to do this, you know.
Yeah.
I'll appreciate that. And that is exactly what makes them bolt and run.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
If he finds an obstacle is just too overwhelming, like I said, just be satisfied with his attempt to approach and reward him for that. And the lesson there is save total negotiation of the obstacle for another time. It's perfectly acceptable. You know, you've got all the time in the world. If you give yourself all the time in the world, it's your choice. Don't make the choice that you got to go to the grocery store in 45 minutes and we got to get this done.
Right.
Because
right.
That's just going to mess you up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will be doing lessons over and over and over. So your equines will eventually learn to be attentive, patient, and confident about moving through the various obstacles, such as when you're training for obstacles, you might use ground poles, tires, the bridge, stopping at a mailbox, walking through a tractor tire, backing through straight and parallel poles. All movements will become purposeful, and they like to see purpose in what they're doing. And he'll learn to remain attentive to you and to respond promptly during his lessons. It's a mutual negotiation here. You listen to him, he listens to you, and you don't push anything. And this is crucial for safety when working with any equine. You can significantly lower the risk of your animal becoming distracted by using good manners at every stage of interaction with him. And when he is comfortable, it's always good if you can go ahead and you get into the obstacle and square him up. that puts equal weight over all 4 feet, puts him in the best physical posture to rest and relax. And this is why we break down the obstacles into small steps when we're doing them. At first, we want them to just get through, so we don't stop in the middle of them or anything the first few times around. But then afterwards, you do get him, you know, to where he's confident, he's got that confidence, he's ready. And so then you start stopping him in the middle of these obstacles and squaring him up there in order to get the sigh. When he's totally relaxed and he's totally balanced in his body.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. When you get to the point where he's, you know, we were talking about first, just getting through obstacles. And then, you know, you got to realize that getting through isn't the whole story. We've got to get to the smaller steps. And so we will break these obstacles down into small steps and stop him in the middle of the obstacles and ask him to square up. And this is when you will bring in the word sigh. Because when he's in that good postural position with equal weight over all 4 feet, he'll take a deep breath and he'll let out the sigh of relaxation before going forward on your command, of course. He'll be very comfortable in that position at any time. And this is how you set the stage for having an animal that will stand still for mounting. They have to have core strength to be able to stand still when you are pulling on one side and they're trying to keep their balance. And an animal that doesn't have a good core cannot stand still while you're pulling them sideways. So you want to set them up so they can. And then, like I said, you know, you give them their reward, and then you will hear them take a deep breath and let out a sigh, and they will be in a total state of relaxation before you move on. So giving plenty of oats reward and remembering the word oats will help you to change your equine's fear into curiosity. And this will set the stage for any time that he's questioning anything. You know, he those same railroad ties that smelled so bad, he'll stop, he'll observe them, and you just remember your word oats and just be willing to stop and let him observe them. And don't approach him until you see that he's showing some interest in going forward and looking at it. And so you kind of put it on his time. And if you then, when he approaches, you let him approach as much as he wants to approach and let him pick the time to touch it, whatever it is that's scaring him. And, or in some cases, the thing that's scaring him could be clear across the field. But if he's walking towards it, let him walk towards it as much as he will, you know, go before he, you know, starts to just relax and be calm and sigh. So when you remember this word oats and you take this kind of an approach, then what you have actually done, like I said, is turned his fear into curiosity. And this will be the way he approaches everything that gives him anxiety. And it will also affect you, so it won't create situations between you that create anxiety in you. And you will be able to control your own temper and not get so pushed out of shape because things aren't working the way you want, because you're setting it up to succeed. And when you do, you will succeed.
Oh, you bet. And this really works, because anytime you try to speed up the process, it just creates anxiety, just like you said, Meredith.
Well, I discovered these things over years, only proving that it doesn't happen overnight.
Yep.
It just means you got to learn what all those different steps are, you know?
Yeah.
And be willing to keep yourself in a good mood and look at the silver lining in everything and be grateful for every moment of life on this earth, because there is good in this world.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much good in our equines, and especially the mules. I am so proud of them and their owners that are there helping after those hurricanes back east.
Oh, sure.
You know, I just can't. There are some really good people in this country. They don't ask for any recognition or anything like that. They just get up and do.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what you got to do, too. Don't talk about what you're going to do. Just know what's good and do it.
Speaking of good, I think lunch would be good.
I tend to agree. Thank you so much. This is always fun to do.
It's great. And thank you, Meredith. This is just awesome. Okay, we will talk soon.
Sounds good.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.